This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us for Family Policy Matters. This week we are pleased to bring you the first part of a powerful presentation by former Pennsylvania Senator and 2012 presidential candidate Rick Santorum at the North Carolina Family Policy Council's Major Speakers Dinner event in Raleigh in March 2015. Senator Santorum is co-founder of Patriot Voices, a grassroots and online community of Americans from across the country who are committed to promoting faith, family, freedom, and opportunity. He is also CEO of Echo Light Studios, a fast-growing faith and family film production company. He is also co-author with his wife Karen of a brand new book about his special needs daughter Isabella, entitled Bella's Gift, How One Little Girl Transformed Our Family and Inspired a Nation. In part one of this two-part series, Senator Santorum shares how his youngest daughter, Bella, who was born with a genetic disorder called trisomy 18, inspired him as a father and as a public figure. Now to Senator Rick Santorum.
Thank you very much. I want to share a few things with you. The first is talking about my daughter, because that experience that we detail in Bella's Gift, this our book, to me was something that was a beautiful lesson learned for me. I was very involved in the pro-life movement for many years, since the mid-1990s. I was involved in the partial birth abortion bill and a whole host of other pieces of legislation, and I've watched the pro-life movement for a long time. And the pro-life movement has changed, and it's one of the reasons that America's ideas on life are changing. You know, in spite of all the darkness that you see out there, there's one movement that's going against the raw sewage that's coming in the culture, and that is the pro-life movement. That, believe it or not, millennials are more pro-life than their parents, and that's a remarkable thing to think about. But I really do believe that gives us some hope on a couple of fronts. Number one, because how the pro-life movement has gone about transforming hearts and minds. And it's done so by, something that we all know works, something that's, I suspect, worked in many of our own lives, and that is Christ's love. The pro-life movement has changed its tenor and its tone from one that is more moralizing and condemnatory in its early years to one that reaches out through pregnancy care centers and pro-life organizations, and understands that the world is broken. The people who are in crisis don't need our condemnation. They need our love. They need the love of Christ to open their arms to them and say, we love you. We are here for you. We understand that this is a broken world, and you've been abandoned in many cases, lied to. You don't feel you have a choice. And we're out there on the front lines. I was just at a crisis pregnancy center in Iowa, just happened to be in Iowa, and right across the street from a Planned Parenthood clinic. And it's beautiful to see the bars and the windows and the fence around this rather sterile looking building of Planned Parenthood, and this beautiful welcoming center that just exudes Christ's love, exudes that we are here for you. That, ladies and gentlemen, is, I know how many, each and every one of you, in one way or another in your life, was brought to a more meaningful relationship with Him. It's through love. And I share that with you because we experienced a similar thing in our journey in 2012 with our daughter Bella. You may recall that during the presidential election, it was after the Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina primaries, Florida was up next, and I had to suspend my campaign because my daughter Bella, who was born with trisomy 18, which is a condition, according to the literature, incompatible with life. Less than 1% of children who are diagnosed with that make it to their first birthday. And she was at the time a little over 3 years old, and she was happened to be home for one day. And so I took a day off and went home. And of course, as God would have it, that night our daughter got really deathly ill. We ended up going into the hospital, and in the hospital they x-rayed her lungs, and her lungs were completely full of fluid. They diagnosed her with pneumonia. The last time that Bella had pneumonia was almost 2 years ago. Before that, and she was in the hospital for 5 weeks on a ventilator, and remained on oxygen for weeks after that. So Karen and I were there all day. It was a Friday. We were there all day Friday, just believing that, you know, our campaign was over, that Bella was going to be sick and maybe even die, and we just had to be there with her. And we made the decision to announce that we were not just suspending the campaign, but why. And one of my friends convinced me that we needed to say why, even though we wanted to protect her privacy. And he said, well, don't you want people to pray for her? And we said, well, that's the best reason to tell people what was going on. And so we did. But a long story short, Bella, always when she gets sick like that, she gets worse for a while before she gets better. These are little children who have narrow airways. She has chronic lung disease. This is a child who can't stand or can't sit up and hold herself up. So it's very low muscle tone. And so we had very little hope that she would recover, at least at any time soon. But that night she didn't get worse. And the next morning when they brought the x-ray in to x-ray her lungs were perfectly clear. So we went back out on the trail, and everything was different. Our first stop was in St. Louis, Missouri, and we were supposed to do a manufacturing speech at a community college right outside of St. Louis. And I showed up, and there were all these people standing outside the building. I thought, ugh. We didn't even call the college. That's how disorganized we were at that point. And all these people were waiting. They couldn't get in. So I got out of the car and I said, can we find someone to let people in? And they said, what are you talking about? I said, well, all these people out here. They said, well, that's the overflow. And I walked into that room and I'll never forget the energy and enthusiasm. I looked around and I saw this little girl there sitting on her father's shoulders holding a sign. And she had trisomy 21. An extra 21st chromosome, which is called Down syndrome. And she was holding up this sign, and the sign said, I'm for Bella's dad. Everything changed. People from all over the political spectrum, not just during the campaign, but afterwards. It was remarkable how the impact this little girl and her struggle, people who would have encouraged mothers to abort a child with trisomy 18, were somehow inspired by Bella's victory. It lifted them up. It made them see the reality of the dignity of all human life. I want to share a little story with you because shortly thereafter, we went to those three states and we ended up winning. Went to Missouri. We ended up winning Missouri and two other states in one night. It was a miracle. They had given us up for dead, but yet we won. And all of a sudden, of course, when you win, you go to the top of the polls. And of course, they just dump everything on top of you at that point. You'll see this in the coming year. As people rise to the top, they just get beat down to the bottom. That's the way it works in politics. And so they were throwing out everything on me. Even a speech I'd given in Florida talking about how Satan is attacking this country. And that was the most amazing day in the campaign. I had national reporter, international reporters coming up to me all with the same question when they had seen this report about me giving this speech. And the question was, same one after another. Do you actually believe in Satan? They were absolutely flummoxed that I believed in the literal existence of Satan. That's to give you an insight into the national media. Well, It so happened that a couple of days later, I did a Sunday show with Bob Schieffer. And after that show, a reporter, you'll know the name, Joe Klein, he writes for Time Magazine. And so Joe Klein writes this article, which I think encapsulates the beauty of going out and telling the truth. That's why I know you're here, because you have an organization out here who's willing to go out and tell the truth. And I think it's important to understand that as much heat as you will get, as much heat as I've gotten over the years, that people, when they hear the truth, they may not accept it. In many cases, they may get really angry with you. They still in their heart know the truth. Deep down, they know the truth. I'll share with you this little article that was written. It was called Rick Santorum's Inconvenient Truths. He talks about, at the beginning of it, me going on Bob Schieffer's show and how Schieffer was just amazed that I had said these outrageous things about Obamacare and prenatal testing, that we shouldn't Obamacare shouldn't pay for amniocentesis because it ends up with more abortions, trying to eliminate disabled children, things I'd said about education. And Joe Klein says, Santorum has become the inconvenient candidate for even those who agree with him. These are delicate issues to be handled delicately. The Right to Life movement has been particularly clever and disciplined, changing public opinion about abortion over the last 20 years. It's gone after the most egregious, grisly outliers like so-called partial birth abortion. It's gotten a major boost from science, comma, ironically, comma, as sonograms have made it impossible to deny that from a very early stage, that thing in the womb is a human life. Then he concludes with, there's something admirable about Santorum's near toretic insistence on bringing up issues no one else wants to talk about. His emphasis on the importance of intact families is undoubtedly correct. Every major study since the 60s has shown the disaster of out-of-wedlock births. Even Santorum's use of prenatal testing raises uncomfortable issues for many people. It was a sonogram that helped determine that Santorum's son, Gabriel, needed microsurgery in the womb to clear his bladder. Rick and Karen decided to fight for Gabriel's life, which nearly cost Karen her own. And they passionately embraced the child during his 2 hours of life on earth. They spent the past 3 years caring for their daughter, Isabella, whose genetic defect, trisomy 18, is an early death sentence. Yet I'm haunted by the smiling photos I've seen of Isabella with her father, mother, brothers, and sisters. No doubt she struggles through many of her days. She nearly died a few days ago. But she's also been granted 3 years of unconditional love and the ability to smile and bring joy. Her tenuous survival has given her family a deeper sense of how precious even the frailest of lives are. All right, I can hear you saying the Santorum's family's course may be admirable, but shouldn't we have the right to make our own choices? Yes, I suppose. But I also worry that we've become too adverse to personal inconvenience as a society, that we're less rigorous parents than we should be, that we've farmed out our responsibilities, especially for the disabled, to the state. And so I'm grateful to Santorum for forcing upon me the discomfort of having to think about the moral implications of his daughter's smile. Be not afraid. Be not afraid to tell the truth. Be not afraid to be a light in a dark world.
You've been listening to part one of a speech given by Senator Rick Santorum at the North Carolina Family Policy Council's Major Speakers Dinner event in Raleigh in March 2015. I encourage you to tune into Family Policy Matters next week for part two of this exciting presentation. Thank you for listening, and if you would like to learn more about the North Carolina Family Policy Council and our Major Speakers Dinner events, please visit our website at ncfamily.org. Again, that's ncfamily.org.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.